Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on modern money mechanics. You know, banking is the most important subject that intelligent persons can investigate and reflect upon. It is so important that our present civilization may collapse unless it is widely understood and the defects remedied very soon. Who said that? Robert Hemphill, the former credit manager of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, Georgia. The monetary system of the United States and the major nations of the free world was established in 1694 by the Bank of England. This system subverts the legal and constitutional government and leads to socialism or fascism through favored corporate creation and control of the government's money and credit. It directs the policies of government and holds in their hands the destiny of the people. Who said that? Reginald McKenna, the chairman of the board and president of the Midlands Bank of England. My agency, in promoting the passage of the National Banking Act was the greatest financial mistake of my life. It has built up a monopoly which affects every interest in the country. It should be repealed. But before that can be accomplished, the people of America will be arrayed on one side and the banks on the other in a contest such as we have never seen before in this country. Who said that? Salmon P. Chase, the Secretary of the Treasury in the Lincoln administration in 1864. And finally, it's well enough that the people of this nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. Who said that? Henry Ford, 1922. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, believe it or not, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and that's because everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it does not protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. And that's because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. In reality, it's knowing how this information is gathered, what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you yourself have not revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package first? That's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining and informative. It's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. And all you have to do is call the school, that is the law school, 417-273-4967, and order yours. Now, if you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. Modern Money Mechanics, a publication put out by the Federal Reserve Banks, all 12 of them. It's not the only publications they put out. And doing a little research for this program, I discovered that the Federal Reserve puts out a number of publications that are easy to understand, and they're designed for propaganda purposes. The Federal Reserve wants you to understand modern money mechanics. And they've put out a number of little comic books to explain how it works. You have to have a simple methodology for explaining to a simple-minded populace. So one of them is called Once Upon a Dime, published by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and it's in comic book format and explains to you modern money mechanics. They actually have a publication called Modern Money Mechanics for the express purpose of explaining to you why it is we have paper money and why paper money and checks and credit cards are the greatest things since sliced white bread. Then there's the story of inflation put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And it also is in a comic book format. And you can read this comic book and it'll explain to you and propagandize you and explain why we have inflation. And the story of consumer credit with credit cards on the face of the cover put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in comic book form so that you can understand consumer credit. Then the story of banks and thrifts put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in comic book form so that you can understand this. This isn't written for children in the third grade, boys and girls. This is written for you, you people that have PhDs and master's degrees and have graduated from college. And then the story of foreign trade and exchange put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I recommend that you buy all of these. And in fact, I think that they're free. I think you can just send for them. Start off with Modern Money Mechanics. Tell them, you know, I'd write to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, New York City. You could get it from San Francisco or Atlanta. Any of the Federal Reserve Banks will have them. And they'll explain to you all of the good things that you ought to know. All of the good things about paper money. Then on the other side of the aisle, there's a guy by the name of Ron Paul. On September the 7th, 2003, Ron Paul spoke to the House of Representatives. Actually, its date is September 5th, so if you go to the congressional record, you can get Ron Paul's entire transcript. I got it from rents.com, R-E-N-S-E.com, dated 9-7-2003, Ron Paul on Paper Money and Tyranny. I thought it was quite a treatise, and I thought I'd share it with you. Because every once in a while, a student will call, and they'll ask, can you tell me where I can learn more about paper money and gold and silver coin? Where are these books and treatises that will explain to me? People who are accountants, and I have a daughter who is an accountant. She's a CPA. Sweet girl that she is. Doesn't have a clue as to how to use gold and silver coin or why she should use it or what the controversy is about. You've got 290 million people in the United States. 5% of those people own 100% of the gold and silver in the nation. 95% have no money. They have credit in the form of Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards. They conduct all of their business and business transactions in credit, known in law as CHOSES in action. CHOSES in action. They don't pay their debts at law. They discharge their debts in equity. They can't tell the difference between a discharge and a payment and don't care. How did this state of affairs come upon us? Is it because Americans are naturally ignorant? Or maybe they're just stupid and can't learn? Or maybe it's a combination of both, or maybe there's a third factor. We just plain don't give a damn. I would say that it's probably a little of all three, but particularly the last. Hey, listen, we have lived the life of Riley here in America for the last 75 years, squandering, like the prodigal son, our inheritance. Now that our inheritance is gone, and we're now broke, can't pay our bills, I'm suspicious that in the near future, we're all of us going to be looking around and asking, what happened? And Ron Paul wants to tell you what happened before it happens, so that when it happens, you'll know what happened, why, to who, and who caused it. That's the purpose for Modern Money Mechanics. Listen to this. All great republics throughout history cherished sound money. This meant that the monetary unit was a commodity of honest weight and purity. When money was sound, civilizations were found to be more prosperous and freedom thrived. The less free a society becomes, the greater the likelihood its money is being debased and the economic well-being of its citizens is being diminished. And that's why in the Bible we have these four words. It says, thou shalt not steal. It's the basis of a statute that says, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. It's the balancing factor. It is the basic law of economics. It says that if you debase your money, poverty will surely follow. Well, Alan Greenspan, years before he became Federal Reserve Board Chairman in charge of flagrantly debasing the U.S. dollar, he wrote about this connection between sound money, prosperity, and freedom. In Greenspan's article called Gold and Economic Freedom, The Objectivist, July 1966, Greenspan starts by saying, quote, an almost hysterical antagonism toward the gold standard is an issue that unites statists of all persuasions. They seem to sense that gold and economic freedom are inseparable, unquote. He also went on to say, quote, under the gold standard, a free banking system stands as the protector of the economy's stability and balanced growth, unquote. And astoundingly, Mr. Greenspan's analysis of the 1929 market crash and how the Federal Reserve System precipitated that crisis in 1929 directly parallels current conditions today that we are experiencing under his management of the Federal Reserve System. Greenspan explains, quote, the excess credit which the Fed pumped into the economy spilled over into the stock market, triggering a fantastic speculative boom, unquote. And he goes on to say, quote, by 1929, the speculative imbalances had become overwhelming and unmanageable by the Federal Reserve. Greenspan concluded his article by saying, quote, in the absence of the gold standard, there's no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. Did you get that? This is Alan Greenspan, the man at the head of the Federal Reserve today in 2004. He wrote in his article, he said back in 1966 when his head was screwed on straight, he said, in the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. Well, that's true. I don't think the average American out on the street really gives a rat's rectum one way or the other. He's already in debt $70,000. That's his consumer debt. Then he's got a mortgage on his house. He's struggling to make ends meet. He and his wife are both working. They're both professionals. They're pulling in $100,000 a year, and they're just barely able to service the debt. Now, that's America in 2004. He explained that the shabby secret of the proponents of big government and paper money is that deficit spending is simply nothing more than a scheme for the hidden confiscation of wealth. That's your Federal Reserve Board chairman. He said, the shabby secret of the proponents of big government and paper money is that deficit spending is simply nothing more than a scheme for the hidden confiscation of your wealth. And yet here we are today in 2004 with a purely fiat monetary system managed almost exclusively by Alan Greenspan, who once so correctly denounced the Fed's role in the Depression of 1929 through 37 while recognizing the need for sound money, gold and silver coin. Now, the founders of this nation and a large majority of the American people up until the 1930s actually disdained paper money. They respected gold and silver commodity money, and they disapproved of a central bank's monopoly and any central bank control of monetary creation and interest rates. Ironically, it was the abuse of the gold standard, the Fed's credit-creating habits of the 1920s, and its subsequent mischief in the 1930s that not only gave us the Great Depression, but prolonged it for 10 years. And yet sound money was blamed for all of the suffering. Yeah, that's right. The gold and silver, the gold standard, was blamed for all of this suffering, not paper. That's why people hardly objected when Franklin Roosevelt and his statist friends confiscated our gold and radically debased the currency, ushering in the age of worldwide fiat currencies with which the international economy struggles today. If honest money and freedom are inseparable, as Mr. Greenspan argued in 1966, and if paper money leads to tyranny, we must wonder why, then, is paper money so popular with economists, the business community, with bankers, and indeed with our government officials? Why is paper so popular? Well, the simplest explanation is that it's a human trait to always seek the comforts of wealth with the least amount of effort, the least amount of work. This desire for wealth without work is very positive when it inspires hard work and innovation in a capitalist society. Productivity is improved, and the standard of living goes up for everyone when people work with gold and silver as the basis of the economy. This process has permitted the poorest in our capitalist countries today to enjoy luxuries never available, even to the royalty of the old. But this human trait of seeking wealth and comfort with the least amount of effort is often abused, and it leads some to believe that by certain monetary manipulations, wealth can be made more available to everyone. And those who believe in fiat money often believe wealth can be increased without a commensurate amount of hard work and innovation. They also come to believe that savings and market control of interest rates are not only unnecessary, but actually hinder a productive growing economy. Concern for liberty is replaced by the illusion that material benefits can be more easily obtained with fiat money than through hard work and ingenuity. The perceived benefits soon become of greater concern for society than the preservation of liberty. This does not mean that the proponents of fiat money embark on a crusade to promote tyranny, though that is what it ultimately leads to. But rather, these proponents of soft money or paper money hope that they have found the philosopher's stone and a modern alternative to the challenge of turning gold into lead. Or is that lead into gold? Well, I think they want to turn lead into gold, but what's happened is our gold has been turned into lead. Now, our founders thoroughly understood this issue, and they warned us against the temptation to seek wealth and fortune without work and savings that real prosperity requires. James Madison warned of the pestilent effects of paper money. And as our founders had vivid memories of the destructiveness of the continental dollar in 1783, George Mason of Virginia said that he had a mortal hatred to paper money. Constitutional Convention delegate Oliver Ellsworth from Connecticut thought the convention a favorable moment to shut and bar the door against paper money. This view of the evils of paper money was shared by almost all of the delegates to the convention and was the reason that the Constitution limited congressional authority to deal with the issue and mandated that only gold and silver could be legal tender under our Constitution. Paper money was prohibited. No central bank was authorized. Over and above the economic reasons for honest money, however, Madison argued the case for morality, that there was a moral issue involved between gold and silver. Paper money, Madison explained, destroyed the necessary confidence between man and man, on necessary confidence in public councils, on the industry and morals of people, and on the character of Republican government. The founders of our Constitution were well aware of the biblical admonitions against dishonest weights and measures, debased silver, and watered-down wine. The issue of sound money throughout history has been as much a moral issue as an economic or political issue. And while we're talking about watering things down, did you know, for instance, that our legislatures have mandated pure Sioux Bee honey may be up to 49% corn syrup. So when you buy this product called pure Sioux Bee honey, it's 51% honey, 49% corn syrup, and it's called pure. No, it isn't. It's adulterated. It's a lie. It's a theft. The spin that we put on it is that it's legal. So what's wrong with that? If it's legal, it's okay, isn't it? Well, even with this history and great concern expressed by our founding fathers, the barriers to paper money have been torn asunder. The Constitution has not been changed, but is no longer applied to the issue of money. It was once explained to me during the debate over going to war in Iraq that a declaration of war was not needed because to ask for such a declaration was frivolous, and that the portion of the Constitution dealing with congressional war power was anachronistic. So, too, it seems that the power over money given to Congress alone and limited to coinage and honest weights is now also anachronistic. If indeed our generation can make a case for paper money issued by an unauthorized central bank, it behooves us to at least have enough respect for our Constitution to amend that doctrine, that document, and in a proper fashion. Ignoring our Constitution in order to perform a pernicious act is detrimental in two ways. First, debasing the currency as a deliberate policy is economically destructive beyond measure. And second, doing it without consideration for the rule of law undermines the entire fabric of our constitutional republic. And though the need for sound money is currently not a pressing issue for Congress, it's something that cannot be ignored because serious economic problems resulting from our paper money system are being forced upon us. And as a matter of fact, we deal with the consequences on a daily basis and yet fail to see the connection between our economic problems today and the mischief that has been orchestrated by the Federal Reserve through paper money over the past 75 years. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Did you know that the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American? That, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget, and closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents alone. And each one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and it's stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how information is gathered, what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, for more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can order yours right now by calling 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me your email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Ron Paul. He made an address to the House of Representatives on September 5th, 2003. Ron Paul on paper money and tyranny. He went on to say that all the great religions teach honesty and money and the economic shortcomings of paper money. They were well known when the Constitution was written. So we must try to understand why an entire generation of Americans today have come to accept paper money without any hesitation whatsoever, without question. Most Americans are totally oblivious to the entire issue of the nature and importance of money. Many people who are in authority, however, have either been misled by false notions or see that the power to create money is indeed a power that they enjoy as they promote their agenda of welfareism at home and empire abroad. Money is a moral, economic, and political issue. And since the monetary unit measures every economic transaction from wages to prices, taxes, and interest rates, money is vitally important that its value is honestly established in the marketplace without bankers, government, politicians, or the Federal Reserve manipulating its value to serve their own special interests. Money as a moral issue. The moral issue regarding money should be the easiest to understand, but almost no one in Washington thinks of money in moral terms. Now, although there is a growing and deserved distrust in government per se, trust in money and the Federal Reserve's ability to manage it remains strong. No one would welcome a counterfeiter in town, and yet this same authority is blindly given to our central bank without any serious oversight by Congress. When the government can replicate the monetary unit at will without regard to cost, whether it's paper currency or a computer entry, it's morally identical to the counterfeiter who illegally prints currency. Both ways, it's simply fraud. A fiat monetary system allows power and influence to fall into the hands of those who control the creation of new money and to those who get to use this new money or credit early in its circulation. The insidious and eventual cost falls on unidentified victims who are usually oblivious to the cause of their plight. This system of legalized plunder, although it's not constitutional, this legalized plunder allows one group to benefit at the expense of another group. An actual transfer of wealth goes from the poor and the middle class to those in privileged financial positions, so that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. In many societies, the middle class has actually been wiped out by this form of monetary inflation, which always accompanies fiat money. The high cost of living, the loss of jobs, hits one segment of society, while in the early stages of inflation, the business class actually benefits from this easy credit. An astute stock investor or home builder can make millions in the boom phase of the business cycle, while the poor and those dependent on fixed incomes cannot keep up with the rising cost of living. Fiat money is also immoral because it allows government to finance special interest legislation that otherwise would have to be paid for by direct taxation or by productive enterprise. This transfer of wealth occurs without directly taking the money out of someone's pocket. Every dollar created dilutes the value of existing dollars in circulation. Those individuals who worked hard to pay their taxes and saved some money for a rainy day are hit the hardest, with their dollars being depreciated in value while earning interest that is kept artificially low by the Federal Reserve easy credit policy. The easy credit helps investors and consumers who have no qualms about going into debt and even declaring bankruptcy if they can't pay off that debt. Now, if one sees the welfare state and foreign militarism as improper and immoral, one understands how the license to print money permits these policies to go forward far more easily than if they had to be paid for immediately by direct taxation. Printing money, which is literally inflation, is nothing more than a sinister and evil form of hidden taxation. It's unfair and deceptive, and accordingly strongly opposed by the authors of the Constitution. And that's why there is no authority for Congress, the Federal Reserve, or the executive branch of our government to operate the current system of money that we have today. Now, money is not only a moral issue, it's a political issue as well. And although the money issue today is of little political interest to the parties and politicians, it should not be ignored. Policymakers must contend with the consequences of the business cycle, which results from this fiat monetary system under which we operate. They may not understand the connection now, but eventually they will, and they must. Now, in the past, money and gold have been dominant issues in several major political campaigns. We find that when the people have had a voice in the matter, they inevitably choose gold over paper, and to the common man, it just makes sense. As a matter of fact, a large number of Americans, perhaps a majority, still believe that our dollar is backed by a huge hoard of gold stored in Fort Knox. The monetary issue, along with the desire to have free trade among the states, prompted those at the Constitutional Convention to seek solutions to problems that plagued the post-Revolutionary War economy. This post-war recession was greatly aggravated by the collapse of the unsound fiat continental dollar. The people, through their representatives, spoke loudly, and they spoke clearly for gold and silver coin over paper money. Andrew Jackson was a strong proponent of gold and a strong opponent of central banking, especially the second National Bank of the United States. Jackson was a hero. He was a hero to the working class and was twice elected president. This issue was fully debated in his presidential campaigns, and the people voted for gold over paper overwhelmingly. In the 1870s, the people once again spoke out clearly against the greenback inflation of President Lincoln. Notoriously, governments go to paper money while rejecting gold to promote unpopular and unaffordable wars. The return to gold in 1879 went smoothly, and it was welcomed by the people, putting behind them the disastrous Civil War inflationary period. Grover Cleveland, elected twice to the presidency, was also a strong advocate of the gold standard. Now again, in the presidential race of 1896, William McKinley argued the case for gold. In spite of the great orations of the challenger, the Democrat William Jennings Bryan, who supported monetary inflation and made a mocking cross of gold speech, the people rallied behind McKinley's bland but correct arguments for sound money. The 20th century was much less sympathetic to gold. Since 1913, central banking has been accepted in the United States without much debate, despite the many economic and political errors caused or worsened by the Federal Reserve since its establishment in 1914. The ups and downs of the economy have all come as a consequence of Federal Reserve policies, from the Great Depression to the horrendous stagflation of the 1970s, as well as the current ongoing economic crisis. The central bank and fiat money enable government to maintain an easy war policy that under strict monetary rules would not be achievable. It wouldn't be possible. In other words, countries with sound monetary policies would rarely go to war because they could not afford to, especially if they were not attacked. The people could not be taxed enough to support wars without destroying their economy. But by printing money, the cost can be delayed and hidden, sometimes for years, if not decades. To be truly opposed to preemptive and unnecessary wars, one must advocate sound money to prevent the promoters of war from financing their imperialism. Look at how the military budget is exploding today. Look how our deficits are exploding and tax revenues are going down. No problem. The Fed is there, and they will print whatever is needed to meet our military commitments, whether it's wise to do so or not. The money issue should indeed be a gigantic political issue. Fiat money hurts the economy, finances wars, and allows for excessive welfareism. When these connections are realized and understood, it'll once again become a major political issue, since paper money never lasts. Ultimately, the politicians will not have a choice of whether to address or take a position on the money issue. The people and the circumstances will demand it when the economy collapses. We do hear some talk about monetary policy and criticism directed toward the Federal Reserve, but it falls far short of what I'm talking about. Big spending welfare politicians constantly complain about Fed policy, usually demanding lower interest rates, even when rates are at historic lows. Big government conservatives promoting grand worldwide military operations while arguing that deficits don't matter as long as a marginal tax rate is lowered, and also constantly criticize the Fed for their high interest rates and lack of liquidity. Coming from both the left and the right, these demands would not occur if money could not be created out of thin air as it is today. Both sides are asking for the same thing from the Fed, but for different reasons. They want the printing presses to run faster and create more credit so that the economy will be healed like magic, or at least so they believe. Well, this is not the kind of interest in the Fed that we need. I'm anticipating that we should, and one day will, be forced to deal with the definition of the dollar and what money should consist of. The current superficial discussion about money merely shows a desire to tinker with the corrupt system in hopes of improving the deteriorating economy that is the results of that corrupt monetary fiat paper system. There will be a point, though, when the tinkering will no longer be of any benefit, and even the best advice will be of no value. We've just gone through 2.5 years of tinkering with 13 rate cuts, and recovery has not yet been achieved. It's just possible that we're much closer than anyone realizes to that eventual day when it will become absolutely necessary to deal with the monetary issue, both philosophically and strategically, and forget about the Band-Aid approach of our current economic system. You're listening to The Law Hour, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours today by simply calling 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and request your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Ron Paul. Ron Paul is probably the only fiscal conservative in the Congress. He's a representative from Texas. If there's another in the Congress, I don't know. There used to be several. We have had some conservatives in the Congress, and they have all spoken out against paper money and for gold and silver. And they're preaching to the choir. They're preaching to people who already know the answer. All of your representatives and congressmen know that their re-election prospects are dependent upon the corporations, the money trusts, the banks and insurance companies that thrive on the paper money. They're not going to change the system. And I'm not advocating that the system be changed. I'm advocating gold and silver coin for the purposes of George Gordon personally, not Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife American. After all, if Americans wanted gold and silver coin, they'd demand it, like abortion on demand, and they'd get it. Americans don't want sound money. Americans want credit cards, easy money, inflation, paper, mortgages, interest, dividends, like Martha Stewart. She may be going to prison, but if you said, Martha, would you like to have gold and silver coin and an elimination of the stock market, bond markets? Would you like to see mortgages, banks, insurance companies, and savings and loans abolished? I think she'd look at you and say, well, you're some kind of a lunatic fringe. You're some kind of a madman, a nut. Of course not. Well, I love securities and securities fraud and profit and gain and interest and usury and mortgages and paper money, even though that's the cause of her going to jail. You see, under the biblical standard, you couldn't have paper money. It was a theft. It was a crime. It was against the law. It creates a theft. You can't have interest. You can't have usury. Without interest or usury, what's the purpose of mortgages, stocks, bonds, commercial paper? Now, there's an important reason that Ron Paul is bringing this to our attention. You should be told why you're broke, poor, and in debt. Somebody ought to tell you. Obviously, your preacher hasn't told you yet. I just talked to a student today. He closed his bank accounts. He's going on to the gold standard. He has a cattle ranch out in Nevada. He's been a normal, everyday, garden variety American with bank accounts, credit cards, and poverty. He went to my courtroom strategy and procedure school, and I suggested to him that the problem that he was having with the BLM was exacerbated by the fact that he lacked standing in court because he didn't own any property, and that he could get his property and property rights back if he'd go back to the gold standard. Now, we Americans have gold and silver coin in circulation in America today. So do you Australians and Canadians. You don't use it, but you've got it. And you've got it because the God of Abraham requires it. It's in the contracts, in the Old Covenant. That Old Covenant is written for your consideration in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. So we Western Anglo-Saxons, we Canadians, Americans, Australians, and Britons, we've got gold and silver coin in our countries today. Now, good money doesn't drive out bad. Bad money drives out good. The paper money will ultimately drive out the gold and silver. But Ron Paul was instrumental in 1986 in getting our gold and silver replaced. Remember, it had been taken away in 1933 by the Roosevelt administration, blamed for the cause of the Depression. Well, we've got it back. We have a two-tier or a dual monetary system, gold and silver, issued by the Treasury, and a fiat currency issued by the Federal Reserve. Now, most people that are in this fight, like Ron Paul and Edwin Vieira, Larry B. Craft and others, have a mission. Their mission statement is, we want to abolish the Fed, abolish the income tax, and restore sound money to America. I imagine you Australians and Canadians probably have similar forces afoot in your countries. These are idealists. I'm not one of those. I'm a pragmatist. People want paper money, and why should I take away from people that which they want? It's not relevant to me. I live on a gold standard all by myself. I doubt seriously that anybody in my county, Ozark County, Missouri, I'll bet you I'm the only man, the only family in this county that practices gold and silver coin. I prosper, and the rest of them languish in debt. You see, boys and girls, the use of gold and silver coin is not necessary on a national scale or a national basis for you to prosper by use of the gold standard. It was created by God. It's a law. It's a law like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I may be the only man in Ozark County that doesn't practice sexual immorality. I don't care. All the rest of the people can go to Flo's Whorehouse and get AIDS, herpes, and VD, and they can cry out to Congress to give them more tax dollars to spend on AIDS research. It doesn't affect me. I don't get AIDS. I don't get venereal disease. I don't suffer the penalties for sexual immorality because I practice the law. I don't suffer the penalties for financial law breaking. I don't suffer the penalty for the violation of the economic laws because I practice sound economic law. That's what I'm selling. I come on the air and I say, let me tell you what Ron Paul wants. Ron Paul wants to convert America to gold and silver for the benefit of 290 million Americans. And God bless him for it. He's not going anywhere. He's not going to achieve that goal. But George Gordon takes the view that if I could just show 10, 15, 20 other people the benefits of the use of gold and silver coin under Title 12 and Title 31 of the U.S. Code and how it benefits you personally, financially, I will have accomplished more than Ron Paul, who spoke before the entire House of Representatives with this message. I agree with Mr. Paul. It would be to the great benefit of 290 million Americans to go on the gold standard and off of fiat money. They're not going to do that. So why should I beat my gums trying to preach to the choir, trying to preach to a bunch of people that don't want to hear it? Ron Paul goes on, he says, for a time, the economic consequences of paper money may seem benign and even helpful, but are always disruptive to economic growth and prosperity. Economic planners of the Keynesian socialist type have always relished control over money, money creation, in their efforts to regulate and plan the economy. They have no qualms with using this power to pursue their egalitarian dreams of wealth redistribution, communism. That force and fraud are used to make the economic system supposedly fairer, and it's of little concern to them. There are also many conservatives who do not endorse central economic planning as those on the left do, but nevertheless, they concede this authority to the Federal Reserve to manipulate the economy through monetary policy, fiat, paper, money. Only a small group of constitutionalists, libertarians, and Austrian free market economists reject the notion that central planning through interest rate and money supply manipulation is a productive endeavor. Many sincere politicians, bureaucrats, and bankers endorse the current system not out of malice or greed, but because it's the only system that they know. The principles of sound money and free market banking are not taught in our universities, our colleges, our schools. The overwhelming consensus in Washington, as well as around the world, is that commodity money, gold and silver coin, without a central bank, is no longer practical. It's no longer necessary. You may rest assured, though, that certain individuals who greatly benefit from a paper money system know exactly why the restraints that the commodity standard would have are unacceptable to them. These restraints are unacceptable to insurance and banking. And indeed, it's unacceptable to communists, socialists, and welfare state utopians. Though the economic consequences of paper money in the early stage affect lower income and middle class citizens, history shows that when the destruction of monetary value becomes rampant, nearly everyone suffers, and the economic and political structure becomes unstable. There is a good reason for all of this to be, and there is good reason for all of us to be concerned about our monetary system and the future of the dollar. Nations that live beyond their means must always pay for their extravagance. It's easy to understand why future generations inherit a burden when the national debt piles up. This requires others to pay the interest and debts when they come due. The victims are never the recipients of the borrowed funds, but this is not exactly what happens when a country pays off its debt. The debt in nominal terms always goes up, and since it is still accepted by mainstream economists that just borrowing endlessly is not the road to permanent prosperity, real debt must be reduced. Depreciating the value of the dollar does that. If the dollar loses 10% of its value, the national debt of $6.5 trillion is reduced in real terms by $650 billion. That's a pretty neat trick, and it's very helpful to the government. It's very helpful to big multinational corporations. That's why the Federal Reserve screams about a coming deflation, so it can continue the devaluation of the dollar unabated. The politicians don't mind, the bankers welcome the business activity, and the recipients of the funds passed out by Congress never complain either. The greater the debt, the greater the need to inflate the currency, since debt cannot be the source of long-term wealth. Individuals and corporations who borrow too much eventually must cut back and then pay off the debt and start anew. But governments rarely do that. Now, where's the hitch? This process, which seems to be a creative way of paying off debt, eventually undermines the entire capitalist structure of the economy, thus making it difficult to produce wealth. And that's when the whole process comes to an end. This system causes many economic problems, but most of them stem from the Fed's interference with the market rate of interest that it achieves through credit creation and printing more paper money. Nearly 100 years ago, the Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises explained and predicted the failure of socialism. Without a pricing mechanism, the delicate balance between consumers and producers would be destroyed. Freely fluctuating prices provide vital information to the entrepreneur who is making key decisions on production. Without this information, major mistakes are made, and a central planned and planning bureaucrat cannot be a substitute for the law of supply and demand. Well, I'm running out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll be back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, and we'll take it up right there, and we'll talk about this thing of modern money mechanics. Ron Paul on Paper Money and Tyranny comes first. So until tomorrow night, you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Gordon Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log, schedule of archives. It can be accessed through my website at georgegordon.org. Well, there's the signal that says our time is up. I'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.